Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Everybody in the Pool, the podcast for the climate economy. We dive deep into the climate crisis and come up with solutions. I'm Molly Wood. So last week, we talked about the hard realization that there are some plastics we simply can't live without. So we might as well try to come up with a replacement for those plastics made out of seaweed. This week, we're continuing that theme, but instead of talking plastics, we're talking materials. Things like rubber shoe soles and textiles, leather, fabric of all kinds, many of which are made from toxic chemicals, fossil fuel byproducts, animals, all kinds of unsavory things. I first became aware of my guest today when I was talking to the team from Allbirds, which has a shoe coming out called the Moonshot that's billed as a net zero shoe, mostly because it's made out of materials that come from these guys.
I'm Luke Haverhals. I'm the founder and CEO of Natural Fiber Welding.
And that means this.
So what we do is we make materials from nature, which, of course, nature, maybe everyone takes for granted, makes a lot of materials. What we don't take for granted is how much of the human economy in the past, let's say 50, 60, 70 years has gone to making everything you own out of synthetics, synthetics that are high in carbon, that come from fossil resources, that are fundamentally extractive, that are fundamentally toxic, not just to the environment, but toxic to you.
Yep.
And then can't be recycled because they're toxic. So if you could make shoes, clothes, cars, furniture, built environments out of only natural recipes, natural recipes that are safe, regenerative, and then have a circular economy story that fits into nature, then that would change everything in terms of trillions of dollars per year of human activity.
Luke grew up on a farm before going to get a PhD in chemistry, and he says he grew up fundamentally aware of the abundance of nature.
You don't have to have grown up on a farm. You just drive on the interstate, I-80, through the Midwest of the U.S. in the summertime. And if you see those long stretches of roads, you see nothing but green. And it probably most people doesn't come to their mind to imagine if you took all of that green stuff and put it on a scale, what would that add up to? And the answer is, well, it adds up to way more than all the food you could ever eat or that people could ever eat. In fact, you know, when you grow corn crops or soybean crops or you look at trees, you know, we get maple syrup from trees. We also get rubber from trees. When you look at all the green things that grow all over the planet, but even just specifically in the Midwest, and you note that there's dandelions and grasses and all kinds of things, what you find is the byproducts and the co-products that you get from food production is way more than enough raw materials to run the entire human materials economy. So you could build all clothes, all shoes, all furniture. When you sum up like the mass of that stuff compared to the mass of all the green stuff,
from just leftovers, from byproducts.
Yeah, that's right.
We're already doing so, not even like growing or harvesting new stuff.
Correct. The leftovers from just one day, one average day of photosynthesis on planet Earth, the leftovers is way more than what people need in years.
So, but wait, back to you though. At what point were you driving along that freeway and thinking, you know, I've learned all about the toxicity of synthetic materials and I got to fix it?
Great question. That was innate context for me growing up. Kind of took it for granted. Didn't know, you know, it was like facts floating around in my head maybe when I was a kid already. But I didn't know what to do with those facts. Then I got a PhD in chemistry. And when you get a PhD in chemistry, you learn about how people synthesize materials, where materials come from. And any PhD chemist that's paying attention while they get their education is going to note how much of our stuff is synthesized starts in oil rigs or starts at pump jacks, flows through pipelines, flows through fleets of ships, gets to refineries. The refineries fractionate and distill and collect different fractions of those fossil resources. And then the machines are optimized to churn mostly out fuel, but the toxic byproducts are what end up being plastics. And then what you find out is plastics aren't really plastics. You think plastics are just one thing, like a polymer, like polyester. But you find out that polyester actually is a mixture of hundreds, if not thousands, of chemistries, both intentionally and unintentionally added to the polymer we call polyester. And many of those molecules have shapes that are like the shapes of hormones in your body. And you don't need only tiny little fractions of shapes in your body that are like the normal shapes in your body to mess with your ribosomes and be endocrine disrupting, signaling disrupting sort of to your biochemistry, cause all sorts of things from fertility issues to diabetes and things like that. So we live in a world where we're doing this uncontrolled experiment. So that's what a chemist would notice. We do this uncontrolled experiment. We do it to the tune of trillions of dollars of materials per year made with synthetics that are fundamentally extractive, toxic, and we'll never, ever have a circular economy story, despite what some people say. The unit economic reality is that there won't ever be a circular economy for plastic. It's not a, and it's really not up for debate. It's just the cold hard facts of a petrochemical refinery only.
Because it's simply, it's not cost efficient to recycle it, and or it is so cheap to make it, or both.
So a petrochemical refinery only knows how to do one thing, which is take therms of natural gas and crude oil and churn it into a standard suite of chemistries.
Yeah.
It has no idea what to do with your old shoes.
Right.
And because that global infrastructure costs tens, hundreds of trillions of dollars, no one can afford to build tens, hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of infrastructure that it would take to efficiently know what to do with old shoes and old furniture and old plastic synthetic things. Let alone the fact that those synthetic things are mixtures, not just the plastics are mixtures. Think about a shoe. A shoe is many, many different, sometimes half a dozen to a dozen different kinds of materials, because the sole of the shoe is different than the upper, is different than the eyelets, is different than the laces.
Yeah.
And so unmixing these complex products costs a lot of money. There's no machines to effectively unmix that, especially down to the molecular level, and make money.
Yeah.
So who's going to front trillions of dollars in order to make that happen at the kind of scale it would need to happen? Nobody. So that's why it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And there is no technical, you know, once thermodynamics are against you and unit economics are against you at the same time, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
Not in any short time frame. So we've got this like 70-year head start of just making this virgin stuff, and people talk about recycling, but it doesn't happen statistically. And some, when people do say it happens, they're calling burning it recycling it. Okay, like, I guess we can play with our definitions, but it doesn't change the reality. And a chemist knows these things, or at least should.
Luke was a chemistry professor at the U.S. Naval Academy looking into how to mimic nature to come up with new kinds of materials.
And I had this epiphany one day, which is I was trying to dissolve, using chemistry, some hemp fiber in the lab. But instead of that hemp fiber getting perfectly liquefied how I thought it should, it was fusing together. And I thought to myself, maybe less is more. What if I could weld, fuse, mold, shape natural materials as they are without derivatizing them? Why don't I want to derivatize them? It'll cost money. It'll make them toxic, potentially. It'll
be harder to untangle on the back end, like you said.
What if we could build recipes, kind of like we build recipes in our kitchen? We take abundant, low-cost nutrients, and we put them together in different ways, and we make food, nutritious dishes. what if I optimize recipes not for nutrition, but what if I take the byproducts of things we're not going to eat that are very structurally strong, flexible, robust, non-toxic, because they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. What if we could take that stuff? What if we could make shoe soles? What if we could make fabrics? What if we could make furniture, leather-like materials, let's say,
right,
this other way?
Right.
Then some amazing things happen. Number one is that's the most scalable thing you could ever do, because nature is at bigger scale than anything people do. It would be the safest thing that you could ever do, because we already have sort of evolved and grown up in this gamish of nutrients that are all around us. It's all solar powered. It's already globally deployed. It regenerates itself. And nature has a recycling plan for everything that's natural. It's already built. And if you can make recipes that perform and get those recipes to run in the global supply chains that make shoes, make clothes, make cars, then that would be the biggest takeover story maybe in, well, at least in materials economy history. The biggest one since synthetics took it over in the last 70 years. I got really excited about this idea that you could mold and shape nutrients and you could make complex, high-performance materials. Mm-hmm. And what was really exciting to me was not only could you do it, when you get the performance that way, it's the safest, most scalable, most regenerative, most circular, most all the goodness that's all around us when you take a walk out in nature, that kind of goodness could be your shoes, could be your clothes, could be your home and built environment, could be in your car.
Right. And hence this kind of wonderful, I am a huge fan of names that are really on the nose, like Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. So hence this wonderfully on the nose name, Natural Fiber Welding. It's all coming together now. No pun intended.
One of my colleagues wanted to call it ionic liquid facilitated biopolymer mobilization and remobilization or something like that. And
I said that's
very technically correct. Let's call it natural fiber welding, because even scientists like nice hooks.
Yeah. Yes. So what was when was that? Sorry, remind me. How long ago was that?
So I was at the Naval Academy from 2008 through 2013.
Okay.
Three beautiful little girls came along for my wife, Noelle, and I in our time at Maryland. And we moved back to the Midwest to be close to our families. And I took a job at Bradley University as a chemistry professor in Peoria, Illinois. And within a couple of years, actually within about a year or so of starting, I started building spreadsheets. And I started building spreadsheets that were like, so what if I took this process that I know works in a lab, works phenomenally well, does super interesting things.
Right.
What would happen in a world of automation if I took advantage of robots and big machines that exist in the world that already mold and shape synthetic things? But what if those machines could be programmed to run natural recipes and mold and shape natural stuff? Mm-hmm. Could that be a business? And very quickly, I convinced myself, not only could it be a business, it could be the business that changes the material world.
Awesome.
Not because I'm so special, but because nature is so special, because
right.
those machines have been invented. And the work to me seemed really obvious, which was figure out how to regeneratively source these natural ingredients, make sure you're not, you know, wrecking people's day eating food or something, make sure you're not causing deforestation, mm-hmm. but run these abundant, safe recipes, run them in supply chain or through machines that supply chain has. And if you can convince right. BMW, Ralph Lauren, Stella McCartney, and many, many others, if you can just convince those three, you probably can convince everybody mm-hmm. that they should be that builds products, that they should be customers. So that's very happily, we're at this moment now, this really inflecting moment where NFW has proven all of this works at scale.
Right.
In fact, now we're increasingly doing this in global supply chain, and we have over 3,000 brands that are in our pipeline. So in other words, think about it.
Including the ones you mentioned, right? Those are not hypotheticals, plus all birds, plus, you know.
The biggest consumer electronics companies, the biggest, you know, car companies, the biggest furniture companies, the biggest clothing companies, the biggest footwear companies. They all, like, if you think about it, who doesn't want to move away from synthetic if they can get performance at scale that supports their business, at cost points that are normative? And think about if you're a shoe company, for example. Do you really like making synthetic shoes and then having to buy carbon credits or do some strange, contorted marketing to try to get people to buy your shoe and not feel bad or not feel guilty? Mm-hmm. No one likes doing that. That's hard work. But what happens when your shoe can have natural goodness? Now your consumer can have a shoe and feel good about it. And by the way, when you can tell stories, like if you go to the Stella McCartney webpage, you can see beautiful bags, objects of desire, where not only did NFW deliver materials, that's a given, but those materials have a transparent data story. So the marketing ties all the way back to the farmer. And you can feel good that when your dollars go into this quality thing, you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And you can enjoy it knowing that farmers, people who are managing, indigenous people who are managing forests and rewilding places, they're getting paid to take care of the land. And you're not getting sick from chronic exposure to endocrine disrupting nastiness that's put in synthetics. So
it's a pretty good pitch.
Everybody wants that.
Yeah.
It's the ingredient brand story everybody wants. But the key thing was there had to be a technical bridge built between what regenerative sourcing, regenerative farming, regenerative agroforestry can look like. That, by the way, also increases biodiversity. Like, you need a bridge between those things that are abundant and available to getting then a recipe that performs in supply chain at cost at scale, so that, well, you can buy a camper shoe today. You can buy Baird footwear. You can buy Bellroy.
Right. Okay, so that's the origin story. After this short break, we'll talk a little more about what NFW is actually making with all of these natural products.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to Everybody in the Pool. We're talking with Luke Haberhals, the founder and CEO of Natural Fiber Welding, about using nature to replace textiles and synthetic materials. Much like Sway, my guest last week, NFW is making materials using existing machinery and processes. So tell me more about the technical bridge, because I do, as both a journalist and investor, it's always exciting to hear somebody say, we can plug this into existing systems. Like, go back to that kind of machinery and automation part, where you was part of the unlock for scale and price, the ability to use existing materials creation machinery?
That's right.
And equipment?
That's right. Well, first and foremost, there are already, I mentioned machines earlier. The tire industry, for example, has mixing equipment. You know, in the last 100 plus years, people have been making cars. And what do cars have? Tires. And to mix up rubber formulations, there is a, you know, more than 100-year-old industry of people who build mixers where natural rubber, and then the dirty little secret is, really nasty, nasty petrochemicals like 6 PPD go into the mixer and mix this natural and synthetic stuff up so that you can have a modern tire that is durable and performs. And along come some chemists at NFW, and we recognize that, oh, by the way, NFW has solutions to some of these nasty petrochemicals that are used. Some other time we can talk more about tires, but I'll focus on leather like Miram, for example. We can take those same mixers that normally mix up formulations for tires, and we can mix up flexible recipes for a leather alternative or leather complement called Miram. And we don't have to invent the mixer. We just have to invent the recipe that can run in the mixer. Mm-hmm. And then that recipe has to mix right. Then when you take that recipe, think of that as dough. Now I've got dough. What can I do with dough? Well, in the kitchen, you know, you can make bread that's really fluffy and airy and light. You can make it sweet, call it angel food cake. You could call it sourdough. You could call it crackers. You can use dough, depending on how you make the dough, you can use it in a lot of different ways, make a lot of different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So our dough, what we call intermediates, are designed to be able to do different things. So then you can take this, in other words, you can take this dough and you can take a lump of it and you can put in the right dough, you can put into a shoe sole mold and you can pound out, and we'll give you pictures and you can show it, shoe soles.
Yeah.
All natural. No petrochemicals to cure the materials. But then if you can do that, then you can also do leather-like material. So in that case, to do leather-like materials, that's more like a sheet. So what do you want to do with the dough? Sheet it out like it's, you know, like a sheet of noodles or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then feed that. And by the way, there's already standard equipment for that because the plastics industry has been making sheets of plastic for a long time. So there's big heavy duty roller type machines that can take the dough and squeeze it flat, and you roll up the flat dough now, and you bring that to a roll to roll belt press that makes laminate flooring or plywood at massive scale. That kind of machine, which is cost optimized to make those kinds of things, is way more than necessary cost optimized to make an even more valuable material that's leather like, that's Miram. So these kinds of equipment, they already exist, and there are people in the world that then manufacture shoes, manufacture clothes, that already have these gargantuan facilities where they take in both natural materials and also tons and tons of synthetics. They mix up these materials, they make materials, they cut, or they buy materials direct from other people who do the mixing and making, but then they cut, sew, and they cut, sew, and make bags, they cut, sew, and make shoes.
NFW currently has a manufacturing facility in Peoria, Illinois, where for the last 7 years, they've been making and perfecting materials and recipes, testing them on existing manufacturing infrastructure, and bringing on customers. The plan is to license the recipes for manufacture around the world. You brought up the sourcing, the regenerative sourcing systems that you're setting up. So tell me a little more about the feedstock, where it comes from, how you find people, how you get it places.
So our ingredients are just like these the commodities of life, if you will.
Right.
Then there's different kinds of farming in this world. There's you know, the prairies of the Midwest have been turned into fields. And what you don't want to do is be sourcing and causing people to cut down a biodiverse forest in order to put some very monolithic kind of cropping system in its place. Mm-hmm. So what we do is, and you know, then that's clearly people are concerned. Usually people are too concerned about in sourcing, as they should be, about two different things. Number one is, are you competing with food? And number two is, are you causing deforestation or loss of biodiversity? Mm-hmm. And there's a simple answer to both those things, which is no, because we go find and talk to the farmers. Mm-hmm. So we literally have people on Team NFW that are partnering with existing commodity supply chains to pick out those parts of the supply chain that are very explicitly and willfully working with farmers on land management. And in particular regions. So you can buy your veggie oil from the Midwest of the United States, and not from some deforested place. And you can prove that with a paper trail.
Tell me in our remaining time about the products. You mentioned the leather replacement, the shoe sole replacement. I know there's a specific product line.
So first of all, it's a materials platform. You know, there's lots of different kinds of materials that use petro or petrochemical, you know, that are either wholly petrochemical or partly petrochemical.
Okay.
So leather and rubber, you know, the inputs start natural, but then leather and rubber both get formulated with like in the case of leather, chromium, in order to be automotive grade. Then animal skin isn't really that durable, so it gets coated with a synthetic polymer called polyurethane often. So there's lots of examples I could give of like natural materials like skin or sap of trees that start natural, but then they, in order to perform through the manufacturing processes and make products, they, we've used these cheap, abundant, well, somewhat abundant, let's say you have to have a whole petrochemical refinery in a Rube Goldberg system to deliver that stuff. But because the fuel industry exists.
But it exists, we got to use it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All of that machinery, by the way, was to get fuel.
Yeah.
So the plastics industry benefited from this accidental infrastructure sort of historical artifact, which is if someone had tried to, it had invented plastics first and then tried to get oil rigs and pipelines, it had never happened. Mm-hmm. But fuel is what made it happen. And then plastics, the petrochemical industry piggybacks on that.
Right.
But it piggybacks on this thing that's optimized really for making fuel. That's why it can't recycle your shoes or your clothes. Or ever be non-toxic or ever be anything other than extractive, because you're extracting the resources from the ground. It's not solar powered. All right. Yeah. So
back to the products.
Thank you. The products, it's a platform. So you need it to make modern, let's take shoes, for example, you're going to want to have fabric or thread. You're going to want to have a leather like or flexible, durable, you know, material maybe that's coated or that's smooth instead of just a fabric. Mm-hmm. You're going to want an outsole to be walking on. You're going to want a comfy foam insole to cushion your heel strike. And that you need all of those materials, or otherwise you can't make a shoe. Or you make a shoe, but it's not going to be the modern comfy ones that we've all come to know. So that's what we did. We developed these recipes that run on this infrastructure, but then the infrastructure can deliver many kinds of materials. And so we have this material that's a leather alternative called Mirum. And we have a foam platform of family of materials we call Tunera. And we have these molded outsole. Well, we mostly are talking about molded outsoles, but I could also say molded cases to phones and personal computers, and there's all kinds of areas where you want molded things. And I should have mentioned Claris, for example. We got, you know, molding shape. If you go back all the way back to fiber welding, when you can mold and shape natural fibers, it means you can do really interesting things with yarn and textiles. And then yarn and textiles, by the way, can go into our Mirum product. Mm-hmm. So these different materials we can make, We've proven in market now that we've got solutions that can do every one of those things.
Luke told me the ground rules for the whole company are to start well, using only natural ingredients, stay clean by not adding anything toxic or unnatural to those ingredients, and end well by making sure those materials can safely return to the earth when the user is done with them. And not for nothing, we, the consumer, definitely have a responsibility to seek these types of products out and buy them whenever possible. But it is increasingly the job of the manufacturer to make sure the products end well. This is something called extended producer responsibility, in which it is not the job of a city and its landfill or recycling services, or the job of me, you, Goodwill, and the Buy Nothing group to responsibly dispose of our items. It's the job of the producer to be responsible for the entire life cycle of a product from creation to end. And you can't do that well without knowing where every part of your items came from in the first place. All right, that's it for this episode of Everybody in the Pool. Thank you so much for listening. I'll have links to some of the manufacturers and goods we talked about in this episode in case you're in the mood for shopping. I know I'm hitting up Stella McCartney once I'm done with this episode. Email me your thoughts and suggestions to in@everybodyinthepool.com and find all the latest episodes and more at everybodyinthepool.com, the website. And if you would like to support the show directly and become a subscriber, hit the link in the description in your podcast app of choice and you will be rewarded with an ad-free version of the show. Thanks to those of you who already have. See you next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.